Blog Talk Radio.
So much for coming on. How are you tonight?
Doing pretty well, Frankie. How you doing? How you doing, Zito?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Good to hear from you again, Frankie.
Well, I've been too busy at work lately, but no, it's good to be back on. Yeah, so there's a lot to talk about tonight. Chad Dawson there's some news on Chad Dawson.
Chad is actually finally returning back to the ring tonight.
Right.
He hadn't been seen since he was stopped by Adonis Stevenson one round where he lost his title. And so he's finally coming back, and he's looking to put the division on order, as he said.
Yeah, but how hard is it for a guy like that to come back? I mean, he had consecutive losses, and he was very patient. I mean, he spent 11 years, is what they said, 11 years. Worth of fights, 11 years worth of dedication and blood, sweat, and tears, to lose two consecutive fights.
Yeah, and what I'll say about that is Chad, he lost to Andre Ward, where he had to move down significantly, and he seemed drained, and also Andre Ward's a heck of a fighter. And Chad also lost to Adonis Stevens, who is pretty quick and can hit hard. And I just think the style was just wrong for Chad from the beginning anyway.
I also didn't think Chad, and not to make an excuse for Chad Dawson, but just speaking the way he was before the fight, it didn't seem like he took Adonis as seriously as he should have. Adonis Stevenson was moving up from 168. He had been knocked out. I think he looked at Adonis Stevenson as maybe a quality level B opponent. Chad Dawson was looking for bigger and better things. With that said, I think what's disconcerting about Chad's losses was the way he lost these last two fights. He was essentially dominated by Andre Ward, knocked down a few times before eventually being stopped. And then with his very next fight back with the Dinah Stevenson, he was dropped and stopped hard in the first round. So, again, what's disconcerting is the way he's performed these last two fights. And so I think that the biggest thing for Chad Dawson would be the mental application of his game, because he's phenomenally gifted. He's phenomenally talented. But right now you have to figure what's going on mentally. He has a fight now tonight, which should allow him to build his confidence. He's not in too tough. He's not in too deep. But you never know. Guys coming back from consecutive knockout losses in a row, they don't tend to the level they necessarily were at. But it's happened. It's happened before. It could happen again.
And as talented as Chad is, he has a habit of being a fighter. At times where he has that in him to where he could box like an Andre Durrell, but he chooses to be a little more flat-footed and to engage a bit more.
So and he also tends to lose focus to a certain extent in fights, almost like he becomes a little – I don't want to say bored, because you're never inside a person's head, but they're – every now and then, it seems like whenever I watch Chad Dawson fight, he seems to have a lapse here and there, and it's those lapses that are very dangerous for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of those lapses happened early against Adonis Stevens.
Exactly.
Chad, he's a tremendous offensive fighter, and he's a very good defensive fighter. I think, Chad, he does have an armor issue, to be honest. But, I think, Chad, he could be – I mean, he can come back very good. He has the skills, and I think he has the determination. And the motivated Chad Dawson is something to behold. We saw that against Bernard Hopkins.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Chad also, his first loss was to Jean Pascal. That fight, it looked like it took him a very long time to adjust to Pascal's style. But Chad Dawson at that point had never been in the ring with a guy as quick or a guy quicker than he. And it looked like his defense was predicated so much on his reflexes and his ability to be long and stay out of range. With Chad Dawson, Andre Ward, and Donna Stevenson, he met guys that were fast enough to get there and to touch him up a little bit. And those are the fights he subsequently didn't do too well in. So it'll be interesting to see him come back tonight. He's a tremendous talent. If his mental game is on a level, then, Chad could be back in play very shortly.
Yeah, and style-wise, Adonis Stevens and Pascal are sort of similar. They have similar skills and techniques, but style-wise, these guys will dance around, they'll dart in and out. They'll engage when they want to engage. And that,
right,
to me, seems to give Chad trouble. And one thing that kind of, I don't want to say worries me, but concerns me to a bit about Chad is all of his losses, he hasn't seemed eager to rematch.
Mm.
I haven't seen him eager to rematch Pascal. He rebounded well after Pascal lost, but I didn't see him eager to see Pascal. I didn't see him eager to, well, I can understand Andre Ward at that weight. But after Adonis Stevens, maybe I can understand why, but I didn't hear any talk about that. So we do have to see where his mentals are.
Yeah, I would have liked to see another Pascal fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a tremendous fight.
Yeah.
But I think right now the best thing for Chad is to do what he's doing, to wade in the pool and not dive too far in just yet. It's been, a significant amount of time that he's been out. Still a young guy, but go ahead and get your wheels back under you, get your confidence back before you start stepping into the mix again.
Confidence, absolutely.
Yeah, it's not like he's fighting guys that are lightweights. I mean, he's fought Hopkins, he's fought Pascal, he fought Tarver, he fought Tarver twice, actually. So it's not like he's ducking talent.
No, he's only lost to champions. So,
yeah,
he's only lost to two guys who were holding the belt,
Yeah.
So, you got to give the guy credit for what he's done. Now, he's going through some adversity. Now it's time to come back and see what if he can regain form, so to speak.
Well, I mean, he's fighting George Blades, a guy who, I guess it's a good tune-up fight. I mean, George Blaze is, he's almost 40 now.
Right, yeah. You don't want to throw Chad Dawson in, you know, at the deep end of the pool just yet.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, he's coming off of two. He's coming actually off of a 2013, I'm sure he'd like to forget. And so, you know, you want to start 2014 off on a good note, get his confidence back. And then if he takes care of George Blaze the way he should take care of a George Blaze, then maybe he could start to step it up a little bit, you know. But right now, time is on his side. There is no rush. His name still has cachet. Everyone knows what he's capable of. And obviously the light heavyweight division will be looking to get him back in the mix just for his name recognition alone. So the goal for him is to stay smart and get his confidence back.
Yeah, this fight will be the gauge, just to strictly gauge what he could do. You don't want to put him in too deep against somebody you can't. He would have to start pulling other acclimates of his game out with.
Right.
You want him to keep everything simple and, you know, see, just gauge what he could do so far.
You know, I agree. Yeah, it's, you know, and I think he is a classy fighter, and I think he's got he's capable of winning the belt. You know, it's just it's like you said, he came out really flat. You know, it's like Vito said, Ward is just a damn good fighter. I mean, he's a hard guy to beat on his worst day. You know, and he looked really good against Dawson. You know, but it really depends on how he comes out and how committed he is to that fight. You know, there's two Chad Dawsons. I mean, which one's going to show up?
You know, I tend to concur with that, and I think they're two Chad Dawsons, and I think typically every time I see him, I see both of them. Chad, to me, again, he tends to lull sometimes in fights. He tends to, at different times, seem a little disengaged, a little flat. And he tends to, you know, at different times, lapse and lose focus to me. So I completely concur with that assessment, Frankie. I just think personally I see both sides of Chad Dawson in most fights. It's very rare that I've watched a Chad Dawson fight and seen and you know, watched him and felt, man, Chad has really put together a tremendous performance from A to B. I've watched him fight and marveled at his talent, but I've always felt, you know, there were a couple of moments that he, you know, he wasn't fully Chad Dawson. And so I've never seen him personally fight a whole fight where I thought he was on his A game. Seems like he has peaks and valleys throughout a fight, regardless of his competition.
Yeah.
If he's in there for longer than five or six rounds, the guys want to touch him a little bit more than he should touch a fighter of Chad Dawson's caliber, to me. Not that he has tremendous success, but against Chad Dawson, the guy will occasionally have a little bit of spurts and, you know, a bit of success if he hangs around long enough.
And I think a lot of that has to do with, and it's something you always talk about, Todd, with other fighters, Tim Bradley, the name one, adaptability. Chad isn't an adaptable fighter in the ring.
I agree.
To be honest, when things go differently, Chad, he's not going to do anything different. He's not going to switch up things that he does. Now, what he does is good, but as you said, fighters tend to touch on him. He tends to lapse and lull. I mean, and so as in the Pascal fight, he had no way to deal with that. No switch up, no change up. So, and Chad, even when he fought Glenn Johnson the first time, really, he had a problem with Glenn. Then he didn't switch up or do anything. He just kept doing what Chad does. Trying to keep long punches.
Chad is
to
one of those
active.
Guys, you know, that he doesn't try anything different. He tries harder.
Tries what he does harder. And, I mean, most of the time that's going to work. But against adaptable fighters who will switch up and change up, especially the distance on Chad, then that seems to be a problem with them.
Yeah, but do you think that's a matter of preparation, or do you think that's a matter of, you know, Chad just not being willing to change his style mid-fight?
Well, I think every fighter is completely adaptable. It's tough to think your way through a fight. I think we all can attest to that. It's not something that's easy to do. So when, you know, in the course of someone throwing punches at you, you can't always stop and analyze how they're throwing punches at you. You're just kind of reacting. And so I think what separates to me the very good from the great are the ones that can adapt. You know what I mean? You know, Floyd Mayweather is a fighter who can adapt in the ring. Bernard Hopkins is a very adaptable fighter in the ring. As much as I loved Felix Trinidad, he was not an adaptable fighter in the ring. Doesn't mean you can't have a Hall of Fame career. But to me, what separates the truly elite from the very, very, very good is adaptability. And then that's something to me Chad lacks. I think if he had adaptability within 4 or 5 rounds, he would have figured out Pascal. And what he started to do in the 11th round, he would have done in the 7th or 8th round or 6th or 7th round. And I don't think he would have had as much problem with Bernard Hopkins, given his physical advantages that he had over B-Hop, had he been a little bit more adaptable. So I personally think that has always been one of his faults as well. And maybe that's why he lost, because maybe he's trying to think his way through it or trying to think of something, you know what I mean? And, you know, subsequently kind of gets caught not being in the moment. So it's hard to think of the future when you're in the moment, and that's, to me, part of Chad's problem.
And all of the highly adaptable bullfighters that you've mentioned are always cool under fire.
Always cool.
To be adaptable, you have to be cool under fire. That way, you can react better. I mean, not as necessarily think, but you can mentally react better. To where Chad, his demeanor may look cool under fire, his facial expression doesn't change. Action wise, it's different.
Yeah.
It's different with Chad. I don't think he has that total relaxation. I think sometimes he gets nervous. He panics a little bit, especially not under pressure, like, say, a guy coming to him all the time pressure, but the pressure that he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know, like, this style is confusing him. He can't lay his gloves on the guy, and the guy's laying gloves on him. Chad gets a little rattled with that.
You know what? The fight I'm looking forward to, and I segue because what you said, Zito, is very interesting to me. It's just, you know, something I kind of, again, I think we all concur, it's something we all see in Chad Dawson. But the only way you see something like that in a fighter is if a fighter is truly battle-tested. One thing we can all say is Chad is a truly seasoned, battle-tested fighter, you know, whatever you think of him. We have two guys fighting tonight on that Showtime triple header who are not quite as accomplished as pros or tested. I'm talking about Lomachenko against Gary Russell Jr. One thing to me about Vasily Lomachenko is, though he's only had, they say, 2 pro fights, but in all actuality is 8 pro fights because of the World Series of Fighting. He was paid, no headgear, pro-size gloves, it's a pro fight. But regardless, because of his fight with Orlando Salido, he, to me, went through adversity. He didn't win the fight. He lost the decision. But he was coming on at the end. So in that fight, in a sense, he kind of got his man chops. Whereas you have a Gary Russell who's 26-0 with like 14 knockouts, but he hasn't fought anyone near the level of an Orlando Salido. So unlike a Chad Dawson, where we could say, man, you know what, the problem we have with Chad Dawson is, or what we think separates Chad Dawson from the elite is that, you know, he doesn't necessarily respond optimally under fire. Gary Russell Jr. is, we don't know how he responds under fire. We know how Lomachenko responds under fire. He fights back. He was able to adjust and do some different things. Does Gary Russell have that ability, guys?
Well, if you don't know if the guy is seasoned under fire, that means that he's inexperienced as far as that's concerned.
Or coddled.
Because Gary Russell's been on
this day and age. Or coddled.
Yeah, coddled. But, yeah, however it comes, the guy doesn't have experience with that. We've seen Gary Russell all the time on TV, so his fights aren't hidden. and all those fights, adversity, not every fighter goes through adversity all the time through their career until they meet somebody who's going to bring them through that. Everybody I've seen Gary Russell fight is I can't say they've been. They don't seem like the best competition.
No.
And to give him credit,
he himself has acknowledged that as well. That, you know, he knows he hasn't fought the best competition. He says the goal was to be low risk, you know, high reward, until he got around a title shot. Then he was looking to step it up. So that, according to – that's what his management was looking to do, according to Jared Russell. So.
Well, your fighter doesn't get better that way.
No, I agree. I mean, he hasn't fought any real you're right. He hasn't been tested. He hasn't fought any real fighters. I mean, there's been some people that he's fought that are decent fighters, but, you know, Vasil, however you say his name. Yeah, I mean, this is technically his second pro fight, but I agree with you. You know, he did have – I think he had the eight as well. But, you know, he's got something to prove with this fight, you know, and Gary Russ, you know, he's got something to prove, and he's got everything to win, which makes a very dangerous opponent. Because Gary Russell has everything to lose. It could be a momentary lapse of reason or whatever, but, you know, he's got to be on his game. He's got to fight clearly. He's got to fight with a clear head, and he's got to be prepared for this fight. And that could be his downfall, because I'm not sure he's taking this fight seriously. And, you know, that could really, I mean, we've seen it before.
You know what? I think he's taking it very seriously. And I also think there's also pressure on Lomachenko, because right now, as a pro, you know, whether they want to count the World Series, if you don't count the World Series of fighting stuff, he's 1-1 as a pro. He starts his career 1-2, and he's already lost two world title shots if he loses tonight to Gary Russell. That road all of a sudden looks a lot longer. All of a sudden, a lot of the luster is lost from him. Even when he lost to Orlando Salido, he didn't lose much luster. Most people were already saying that's too much too soon. And the way he finished that fight didn't really tarnish him too much. If he were to lose to Gary Russell, who is at this point in time untested, that knocks him way back down as far as the pedestal goes. This is a guy who only lost one fight as an amateur, and he avenged that loss. So I think there's pressure on both of these guys. Obviously, there's pressure. There was pressure on Gary Russell just to take the fight, because he needed to fight someone with a, you know, figurative heartbeat, so to speak. So I think there's, you know, tremendous pressure on both guys. When you size these guys up, Lomachenko is the bigger guy. He, you know, he's about 2.5 inches taller than Gary Russell. I think he's going to fill out a little thicker. Gary Russell has an advantage in, you know, probably hand and foot speed. But both guys are very quick. Both guys are very skilled. Lomachenko has proven to be adaptable. Gary Russell has yet to prove that. We have it's a very interesting fight tonight. Very interesting fight. A lot of people think that is the main event, at least as far as intrigue, even though it's not the main event of the card.
And it was a close fight. I mean, that Salido fight was a close fight. You know, he did bite off more than he chew, but he still made a hell of a showing at that fight.
You know, one thing I know about Lomachenko, not only is he adaptable, but he's tough, because Salido outweighed him significantly in that fight. If you remember, Salido lost his title at the scales.
Right.
He came in weighing 147. So Lomachenko, who I don't know what he weighed, but he was fighting an effective welterweight that night, essentially. And, you know, Salido hit him with some good shots. Lomachenko never appeared to be seriously hurt. And you know what? He fought back, and eventually, you know, it took him a while to adapt, but he eventually adapted. And you know what? And he was able to close in going towards the end. Gary Russell Jr., we talked about adversity. Adversity is not always getting your ass handed to you in the middle of a fight. Adversity sometimes is just when plan A is not working. If you have to resort to plan B, then guess what? You've experienced a little adversity. Gary Russell Jr. has never had to go to plan B. So, I mean, he's never fought anyone that's been able to bring a plan B out in him. So that way you don't know what he's capable of if he's forced to adapt and change. You don't know if he can. You don't know if he can take a shot. Again, he hasn't fought, you know, any significant opponents. With me, when I see a management kind of coddle a fighter and protect him to that point, kind of like with Deontay Wilder as well, regardless of what kind of offensive or physical gifts this guy has, it makes me question What are they seeing in training and in training camp that we're not seeing when we watch the guy fight? Because to me, when you have a guy that freakishly talented, like a Gary Russell, like a Deontay Wilder, but you're not putting them in the ring with anyone that can test them, then what is it that you're seeing in your camp that makes you say, you know what, we need to hold off before we do something? So that's, you know, these are the questions that to me are surrounding Gary Russell.
Yeah, and Gary Russell, he's a fast guy. He's a fast guy. He throws combinations. He'll get in, get out. He has his flaws. And it's going to be up to Lomachenko to make Gary Russell go through adversity. This is going to be the fastest guy Lomachenko's faced at the pro level. I'm going to say that.
And it's going to be the fastest guy that Gary Russell's faced at the pro level as well. So, you know,
he's going to be the best guy.
Yeah, not even fast. Just the simple best guy.
The all-around best guy in Gary Russell's face. But with that said, I mean, I would give the favor to Lomachenko, but it's going to be up to Lomachenko to make Gary Russell go through that adversity, because I don't see the judges' scorecard leaning Lomachenko in hand at all.
Well, you know what? Lomachenko's with top rank, and Gary Russell Jr. is with Golden Boy. Golden Boy won the first bid, so it's a Golden Boy promoted event, which is why it's on Showtime. The other thing too is though that this could be, as some people think, the beginning of the thaw and the box of the Cold War between Golden Boy and top rank. But obviously, that's a discussion for another time. But I think I agree with you, Zito. I think I would have to favor Lomachenko, just, you know, not based on anyone's body of work or anyone's amateur pedigree, but you know what? I just got to lean towards a guy I got a little bit less questions about. I think Gary Russell is the more naturally talented guy, just, you know, more athletic, quicker of hand and foot. Lomachenko had a better amateur pedigree, and he's also very athletic as well. So very, very interesting fight. Both guys, fellas, are 26 years old. So two dynamic young fighters meeting for a title tonight. That's something to say.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I wanted to bring up. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Tito.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, Gary Russell being a more athletic guy and more physically gifted guy, Lomachenko's the bit more skillful guy, well, a lot bit to me. And you see more holes in Gary Russell's game than Lomachenko's. And
they really match up.
I'll agree with that. I agree. Yeah.
Like, Gary Russell is quicker, but Lomachenko's quick and has longer arms. You know what I mean? So this is a very interesting fight. Both guys don't mind punching. Both guys not only don't mind, both guys will punch to the body. Very interesting fight. Very, very interesting fight.
Well, you know, just jumping back to the Salido fight, you know, Salido came in at 147, so Lomachenko actually gave up 11 pounds to the guy. But with Salido, you guys have both fought amateur, you know, I've only fought in back alleys, but how do you come in, you know, overweight? Is that preparation? Is that your team just not preparing you right, or –
You know
yeah,
how you come
how
in
does
overweight
that
like that? Meticulously. Premeditatedly. Meticulously. That's how he came in overweight.
He knew early in camp.
Yep, I think he knew in camp, and I think Salido is veteran enough to say, you know what, it's better for me to lose the title at the scales, and that, which, again, is a statement on the meaninglessness of the title today and age. But it was better for him to lose the title at the scales and win that fight than it was to, you know, possibly drain himself. He's an old vet. Once he, like Zito said, once they saw it in camp, they put the brakes on. They put the brakes on.
Once you know early in camp, I mean, he's not going to push the fight. The fighter, as you said, he's seasoned enough to be like, I'm not going to make that. So I'm going to, you know, he's going to shoot for this weight.
You know, what's so great about boxing is, no matter how much you analyze it, how much you put it on paper, paper burns. And with boxing, boxers, they pass the eye test. That's one thing about boxing. You either pass the eye test or you don't. You know, you can look at a guy and know if the guy's a big puncher, know if the guy's fast, and, you know, watch his fights, know if he takes a shot. Typically, you know, just from an eye test perspective, I'm not so sure that Gary Russell would have jumped in the ring with that Orlando Salido and done any better. the question is, would he have done any worse? You know what I mean? So, again, man, this fight has a lot of intrigue and a lot of question marks surrounding it.
And the question marks are all around Gary Russell, the guy we've seen
right.
more.
Right.
You know what?
You're,
but
you're right.
Too, they're around Lomachenko, too, because although Salido is a quality pro, and he's better than these guys at this point in time. Not necessarily from a fundamental technical standpoint, but he's a better pro fighter than they are at this point in time in his life. The reason, as good as he is, he's still crude. And so now we're seeing, Lomachenko against, for the first time, a guy, like you said, Zito, that's going to be quicker than him. That's going to be, nearly, if not just as skilled as him, just as fundamentally sound as him, a guy who also pays tremendous attention to defense. So, there's still some question marks surrounding Lomachenko, too, but not nowhere near to the level of Gary Russell Jr., nowhere near to the level.
And not tough or adaptability.
Yeah, I mean, Gary Russell has great hands. He's got very fast hands. He was, Prospect of the Year by a lot of different media outlets. But, yeah, I mean, he hasn't fought a lot of quality. So you really haven't seen, like you said, the adversity that will be thrown at him tonight.
Yeah. Truthfully, no, I don't know what Gary Russell's defense truly looks like. Because, honestly, he's in control of all of his fights to the point to where he's, they're in the middle of the ring squared off most of the time. He gets to do what he does offensively. And to be honest, when he throws punches and combinations offensively, his chin is up, and he doesn't bring his hands back to protect it a lot. But I think that's the level of competition he's fighting.
Yeah.
So, and with the eye test, I mean, I see a guy like Lomachenko, who we saw a little of, but what we saw of him, we saw that he can adapt to the point to where he can take advantage of that.
Yes. And you're right, Zito. Most of the time when we've seen Gary Russell, he's been overwhelming his foes with his speed and talent. And even on a defensive end, I've seen him flip shots because, he's been so much quicker than everybody. And not only that, but guys that the level of his, the caliber of his opponents, weren't throwing a diverse arsenal at him. Most of them were kind of shell-shocked by his speed. They weren't able to adapt, and they were just trying to catch him. And so he was flipping those shots. When you have a guy who can adapt to you and know when to punch, that's what people don't understand. It's not just about standing there taking shots. It's knowing when to punch. And Lomachenko proved to me that he's a guy who knows when to punch. And like Zito said, that's where flaws can be taken advantage of. At the same time, Lomachenko has flaws that Gary Russell was wholly, talented enough to take advantage of. So this is a fight I have been looking forward to since it was signed. So.
And remember, Lomachenko also won gold medals. He's won gold medals in two Olympics.
Two. Again,
yeah.
396.
Yeah.
In one as a pro, and the one loss he avenged. I mean, the guy was a serious, one of the most decorated amateurs in history. Does it translate to the pros? Not all the time. Howard Davis Jr. will tell you that. Mark Brilliant will tell you that. But sometimes it does. We'll see.
Yeah, not all the time, but in the case of somebody like Rigondeaux, when you have all those fights in the amateurs and you lost very few, you're a good fighter. I mean, you can take off the headgear and everything. You're going to be a good fighter no matter what. That's too much experience.
And you know what? So, when we talk about the Mark Brulins and the Howard Davis, and we say it didn't translate, they were good fighters. They just never matched the expectations that the amateur pedigree set for them. But they were good fighters. So Lomachenko's a good fighter. I mean, we know that. We know Gary Russell's a good fighter.
He's a good fighter.
Are they going to be great pros, good pros, very good pros, great young champions? We'll see.
It remains to be seen, and we'll see tonight. It's some good
fights.
Also
on that card is the return of the Ghost, Robert Guerrero, after a 13-month hiatus. We hadn't seen him since he lost to Floyd Mayweather. He was actually trying to get out of his Golden Boy promotions contract. That was resolved, and obviously he's fighting tonight. The funny thing, too, is just to segue again, since I mentioned the Golden Boy contract, one of the big issues with Richard Schaefer leaving Golden Boy and with Floyd Mayweather leaving Golden Boy, all of a sudden it comes to light that a lot of the fighters you see fight on Golden Boy cards are not actually Golden Boy fighters. They're Al Haymon fighters and don't have contracts with Golden Boy. When Oscar De La Hoya was asked which fighters had contracts with Golden Boy, you know, he just, you know, casually mentioned a few, but the few he mentioned were the guys that were fighting tonight. You know, he mentioned Robert Guerrero and who else was on the card tonight? He just mentioned a few of those guys, like Canelo. But guys he didn't mention was like Keith Thurman. You know, Al Haymon has a lot of the fighters that we all affiliated with Golden Boy. So it's, you know, that's going to be interesting going forward as well.
Well, did you see, you know, speaking of you know, Golden Boy and Top Rank, did you see the whole – there's – the Golovkin-Chavez Jr. fight is, you know, there's those waters have become so muddy, you know, after, you know, the contract offers and how Billy Keen, you know, pissed and moaned about it. Did you guys read any of that?
Well, yeah, what I had read was that, you know, the fight was very close because Bob Arum had actually said that the fight was 99% close to being done. Golovkin
right.
had no issue with the terms. Chavez Jr. had no issue with the terms. The issue Chavez Jr. had was with his contract with Bob Arum. I believe
right.
he only has, like, one fight left on the contract. And Chavez either did not want to renegotiate it or did not like the contract terms. So his issue wasn't necessarily, again, he was fine with the Golovkin fight terms, but he had a problem with his promotional contract. And so that's where they stand right now. Golovkin, obviously, is fighting the former super middleweight titleist in Daniel Gill from Australia. Last time we saw him, he was losing his title by decision to Darren Barker. Last time he was on American Airways. So Gill's a tough guy. He's busy. He's not expected to beat Golovkin, but he is going to be obviously one of the best fighters that Golovkin's been in the ring with. So we still get a really good match, though.
And this is taking place at 168?
Maybe 160.
Okay.
Yeah,
Gill,
Gill was a middleweight titleist. I'm sorry, he lost it to Darren Barker.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's taking place at 160. That's Gill's natural weight. He had been a middleweight titleist for a little bit. And Gill's only had this. He's only had two losses, one to Anthony Mundini a few years back, which he avenged, and the one to Darren Barker, which we saw on HBO a few years, or maybe last year, a couple of years ago. So
it's been a little while. So, what else we got going on in the world?
But tonight, also on that card, we have Devin Alexander, who's making his first return since losing his title to Sean Porter. And he's fighting Soto Caras, Jesus Soto Caras. Why do I always have trouble with his name? I always want to call him Juan Carlos Burgos, you know. But he's fighting Jesus Soto Caras, who last year knocked out Andre Berto, then came back and got knocked out by Keith Thurman. So, you know, it's a pretty interesting fight. Devin Alexander usually does well with straight-ahead guys, which Soto Caras is. So, you know, Devin Alexander should be able to go ahead and steer him and handle him. So, we'll see.
Yeah, Devin Alexander usually has trouble with guys who are pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Soto Caras is kind of crude at times. He's not quick. He's crafty. If Devin Alexander can't really hurt him, which I think he can, but if he can't hurt him, he's going to have a lot of trouble.
I think he'll be able to steer Soto Caras and you know what? I think Soto Caras is wearing down. You know, Soto Caras had a bunch of losses early in his career. Then he had this tremendous, like, streak where he was, you know, winning and, you know, pretty much in every fight over these last couple fights, though. He's been, even the Berto fight, which he won, he took a lot of punishment. I personally think he's seen his better days. And I think Devin Alexander, again, I believe does well with straight-ahead guys. So the Caras is tough as they come, but he can be stopped. He has been stopped several times. I do believe Devin Alexander can hurt him. I think he will hurt him. And I think he'll take the air out the ball enough. Devin Alexander doesn't mind grabbing and holding a little bit. He'll take the air out the ball enough to me to to make this fight not a, a hyper-competitive fight. It'll be a good fight because Soto Carras is only in good fights, but it'll be a one-sided-ish fight, I believe.
Well, I think Devin Alexander can steer Soto Carras for a time. I just think Soto Carras is a little too crafty to, for Devin Alexander. Devin Alexander's one to have those lapses, too.
That's very true.
And you, I don't know if you want to do that against Soto Carras because he'll take advantage of that. And Devin, once things start going bad for Devin, it, they seem to stay like that. He doesn't seem to – well, he can adapt, but he doesn't seem to get the ball rolling in the other direction that often.
No, you know, it seems like when things get tough for Devin, he becomes a little bit more amateuristic.
Yeah.
He starts to win like that, you know, the pity-pat punches. And I could see him doing that with Soto Carras. Yeah, I could see him doing that with Soto Carras. I just don't think Soto Carras can consistently get close to him enough and do damage enough because Devin Alexander has no problem hearing the boos and wrapping, you know, Soto Carras up. He's a big, strong guy, too. So I see him doing that enough to nullify any, you know, significant advantages Soto Carras might have. And like you said, the one thing he really has trouble with is speed, and that's what Soto Carras is really slow on. His craft is going to give Devin some trouble here and there, but I just don't think he's going to be able to consistently land, you know, put paws on him, so to speak.
I agree. Golden Boy's got some good fights tonight. On it's just a really good card tonight. With I don't have Showtime, and I wish I did.
And, you know, the funny thing is they're at the StubHub Center in California, and, you know, none of these guys are huge draws in Southern California. You know, Robert Guerrero would be the closest because he's from that area, and then Soto Carras being Mexican. But none of these guys are huge draws in Southern California. But Southern California and the StubHub Center have been kind to Golden Boy cards, and they usually bring a pretty good crowd. So while I don't think it will be, you know, standing room only, I do think they'll have a decent crowd with, you know, pretty good energy. And I think there's a chance that we could have some really good fights tonight, some dynamite tonight. The gentleman, Yoshihiro Kamigi, that Robert Guerrero is fighting, he's 1-1-1 outside of Japan. Inside of Japan, he's like 23-0 or 25-0 with 22 knockouts. So this guy, you know, he comes into the fight like 24-1-1 with 22 or 21 knockouts. So, again, he's never fought any significant competition. He brings a glossy record. He's not a guy who's obviously Robert Guerrero's been off for 13 months, so kind of like Chad Dawson, this is not a guy who's supposed to beat Robert Guerrero. The reason why they brought this guy in is because it's an action fan-friendly fighting type of guy. This guy comes forward with heavy hands, and he looks to bang you out with big shots. That's a guy who typically is tailor-made for Guerrero, but at the same time, even in losing, guys like that, like Jesus Soto Carras, they put on good fights. Even in losing, they put on good fights. The real treat is truly the featherweight title tilt between Lomachenko and Gary Russell. The other two are hopefully action-packed showcases. That's the way the card is truly set up.
Yeah, well, it should be, like I said, I wish I had Showtime, so I'll be watching it in replays like a lot of people. But no, you're right. It's just a generally very good card. It's going to be a very entertaining evening, but I still think the Russell-Lemachenko fight is by far probably the most interesting and probably the one that will be the most entertaining.
I think so. Z, what you think?
I think so, too. Although, Guerrero tends to get touched on a bit. He's well-rounded, but he tends to get touched on a bit. So I wouldn't be surprised. Somebody with I could maybe still fight it tonight.
Yeah. You know, because Lomachenko-Russell is not going to be a shootout necessarily. It's going to be a high-speed chess match. And, you know, Russ and Yoshihiro and Guerrero could really devolve into a shootout. So you might have a point.
Yeah. Yeah, and Guerrero really, I mean, it was a very one-sided decision with Mayweather. You know, so this could be
been in the ring since, you know?
Right, right. So, I mean, this could be the fight that, you know, but what if he loses? Do you get back in the ring at all? Because he did not look good at all against against Mayweather. I mean, but who does? I mean, who really looks good against Mayweather? I mean, it's hard
apparently
to look Marcos good
Madonna.
Against yeah. But, I mean, it's hard to look good against a guy who is probably the most gifted fighter right now. I mean, he's probably best pound for pound. I mean, we've all heard, you know, Sweet Pea, you know, you remember when Sweet Pea Pernell Whitaker was, I mean, how good he was. And there's always going to be people coming through the ranks. But, I mean, Mayweather's just a freak. I mean, the guy is probably the most gifted fighter in many, many years. And it's hard to look good against him. You know, and Guerrero, I mean, didn't even look decent. I mean, he got beat on.
Yeah. Well, that's what tends to happen with fighters who try to look good against Mayweather. If you're going to pose and try to set up stuff, you're not going to look good at all. In Madonna's case, he's not setting anything up but brutality. That's what he's trying to do. And with that, it's hard to counter that. It's hard to counter somebody who doesn't care. I mean, that's the thing. Guerrero, he started early pretty good, but he started eating the counter right, and he started caring. Next thing you know, he's off the fight. To where Madonna,
yeah, that's true.
He's going in, and he knows he's going to get hit. He knows he's not fast enough to get out the way. So his thing is this. Floyd is not – Madonna really doesn't care about knockout fighters or not. He's just trying to get his shots off. That's all he cares about. He knows he's going to get hit, but maybe he could catch him from this angle while he's trying to hit him or while he's hitting him. You know, he's going to outwork the guy. He's going to, you know, try to hit with hard punches. Well, Guerrero's not made like that. Canelo is not made like that. I mean, as big as he is, he's not one to put his size on the guy to where Madonna came in at 160 fighting Floyd for a 147 fight. Floyd came in, what, 148?
48, yeah.
Yeah.
148 fighting 160. Yeah. I mean, that's a guy who can not care about a counter. So, I mean, Guerrero, he's a tremendous fighter. I remember a fight with Celtic ID. That's what I'm looking for in this upcoming fight. Something like that. That was an exciting fight.
That would be funny.
But Guerrero, he does, I mean, as good as he is, he has a tendency to get touched on.
You know what? So does Devin Alexander, too, now that I'm thinking about it. I mean, these fights, they tip, you know, if you were to write a script based on these fights, they have a predictable narrative arc. But you never know. You could get a twist.
Yeah. As I say, Devin Alexander, as good as he is, he doesn't seem like the most powerful guy. He's tough. I think he has that prideful toughness. But he's a guy that, as I say, the snowball starts going on him, it seems like it keeps going. And he tries to avoid it. Like, he doesn't fight harder. Actually, he fights less harder. He tries to escape a little more.
Yeah, he becomes more amateurish. He really does. He starts to, I specifically remember that against Kotelnik. He started pity-patting his punches and staying on the back foot and just, I mean, really kind of avoiding contact and throwing keep-away punches. But at the same time, you know, he can win rounds that way, too. So, I mean, that's what makes it difficult. So.
Yeah, like the Matisse fight. Definitely. And as I say, Matisse is crude, too. He hits a lot harder than Soto Karas. But he's crude too. These guys do have enough game to touch on Devin Alexander.
He touched on Keith Thurman.
He touched on Keith Thurman, but
Keith Thurman's a much more explosive fighter than Alexander. Alexander's smooth. You know what I mean? And the thing about Alexander, and the reason why a guy like Sean Porter and a guy like Tim Bradley, who essentially are the same guy, but the reason why they, to me, were able to beat him, again, not only did they give him trouble with the speed, but Devin Alexander's the kind of guy, if once you throw off his rhythm, he really starts to have problems. And, you know, I think he's a guy who's tough and can stand in there and fight, but once his rhythm is thrown off, and that's what those guys did, they completely disrupted his rhythm. And Soto Carras, he has to really be on his A game to, you know, put that type of, not necessarily pressure, but put those type of paws on Devin Alexander, because he's a rhythm fighter. That's why he was able to whitewash Marcos Madonna. He had no problem with Madonna. Again, that's not the Madonna that's trained by Garcia. But when he fought Marcos Madonna, he came out and he established his rhythm, and he cruised. And that's what he does when he gets in rhythm. That's why he's a very good fighter, because when he's in rhythm, he really can cruise. The problem is, once his rhythm is disturbed, he plays like a scratched record from that point on. You know, he's just repeating himself with keep-away punches. Again, that's, to me, what makes the Gary Russell-Lomachenko fight so interesting to me. Is Gary Russell more Kermit Cintron? Is he more, you know, Devin Alexander? Or is he more, you know, Jake LaMotta? You know, I mean, what kind of guy is he? How tough is he? You know, what is he willing to go through to change a fight if the fight is not going his way? What is he able to take? How long is he able to hang in there? You know, can he even go on? You know what he said about Lomachenko that I thought was funny? He said, you know, I'm not too worried about this guy. He said, he talked about how great a fighter he was. And he said, but this is the pros. He goes, I mean, he's only going 12 one time, or he just went 12 his last fight. He went 12 against Salido. You haven't fought anyone close to Salido. But yeah, you're like, well, he just went 12 his last fight. Dude, he went 12 with Salido. To go 12 times with 30 of the type of opponents you've been fighting and still wouldn't get half the experience he got going 12 with Salido. So I just found that kind of ironic, but, you know, whatever you have to derive for confidence. But the fact of the matter is that these questions will be answered in a few scant hours.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it's not far away.
No, I'm looking really forward to that.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, I didn't think of that. I mean, he has only gone 12 once, but, you know, Russell's fought a bunch of fence posts.
Yeah, exactly.
Lomachenko went 12, where Juan Manuel Lopez couldn't go 12 twice.
There you go.
I mean, that's something to be said right there.
You're right.
I mean, you know what? In the fight, if it was a 15-round fight, it looked like it was going to go Lomachenko's way all of a sudden. I mean, he literally was turning the fight and ran out of time. Salido was tired. He was starting to get beat up. He got hurt severely in that final round. Salido was hanging on to victory, and he did. He did. Does Gary Russell put in that same performance against Salido? In the 12th round, is Gary Russell still there to even hurt Salido? Or is Gary Russell fighting more like a Devin Alexander, where he's just trying to survive? Or is he fighting like a Kermit Cintron, where he's diving out of the ring? I mean, you just don't know, and we'll find out tonight. That's what I'm – man, that's why this fight is so exciting to me.
I've seen the fast guy fight Salido with those combinations with his chin in the air. Didn't work out too well.
Didn't work out too well. But, you know, I mean, again, Gary Russell – maybe he doesn't do that against a Salido. Maybe he is a little tighter. Maybe he, you know, he's one of those guys that can get away with it even on the highest level. But like I've been saying all day, you don't know. If he is, then you know what? We talk about pound-for-pound guys. Maybe 10 years from now we're talking about Gary Russell Jr. Maybe 10 years from now we don't even remember Gary Russell Jr. You guys remember Anthony Hembrick? Zia, coming out the Olympics, fought a guy named Booker T. Word. And Anthony Hembrick at the time was 12-0. Everybody thought he was going to be the next big thing. Got knocked out second round by Booker T. Word. And, you know, that was basically that for Anthony Hembrick. So no matter how skilled, how talented, how explosive, how impressive a guy looks to fight in there, the other guy assists too. And the true matter of a champion, the true metal of a champion is how you respond, not when you hit, but when you get hit. So Russell's going to get hit tonight. So we get to see how he responds.
Under fire.
Under fire. firefighter.
Yeah, but if Lemachenko doesn't come on till the end of the fight like he did, you know, against Salido, I think Russell wins this fight going away. Because he's going to try and put him away early. And if he scores if he wins the rounds, you know, early, I don't think Lemachenko's got, you know, he can't fight that way. He can't, I mean, no one wants to come back in a fight because, you know, time runs out really quickly.
And you know what? I think part of his slow start, and I honestly thought he would have a fast start against Alito and get worn down later on. That's what I first saw. But you know what? What he had a problem with was the ruggedness of Salido. That's not something you come across in the amateurs. In the amateurs, you have guys who are trying to hit you and not get hit. You don't have guys who don't care about getting hit. They, you know, they'll try to avoid right. punches. But Salido was hitting him wherever he could. A lot of the punches that Salido was landing would have been scored points in amateur fighting. So that's something that Lomachenko had never seen. It's something Gary Russell has never seen because that's not what you
yeah.
see in the amateurs. Once he adapted yeah. to that, he was able to make a better fight. I do agree with you about your analyzation of Gary Russell, the fact that he can come out very easily because of the speed, being energetic, fresh. He can win rounds early, and Gary Russell strikes me as the kind of guy, like a Devin Alexander, that once they get on top of you, they can coast and win just because they will stay away. They will stink out the joint to a certain extent. And guys like that are hard to reel in. You can make it closer, but it's hard to overcome guys like that when they start with a good lead. The biggest difference, though, is I think Lemachenko is going to see a more traditional style in front of him. He's going to see a style that he's more familiar with, style that he's seen in the amateurs before. Not that he's going to be able to dissect it any quicker. Punches aren't going to be coming. They might be coming faster than he's seen, but they're going to be coming from places that he expects them to come from. Salido didn't care about that. Salido was hitting his elbows, hitting his shoulders. That's not Gary Russell's game. Gary Russell's a patient sniper who explodes with speed and, you know, combinations. You know, he's a sharpshooter. And so what you're going to get is you're going to get some posing. You're going to get guys looking at each other. One thing Lomachenko proved to me against Salido is that he's a capable counterpuncher. So you may get him waiting for opportunities against Gary Russell. You could get him, you know, looking at himself saying he's a bigger guy, wanting to push the fight and put pressure on Russell. You just don't even know how these styles are going to mesh to a certain extent. So, again, this fight has plenty of questions surrounding it.
And
well,
you're right.
Yeah.
It's going to look more amateuristic. It's going to look
exactly.
a lot more amateuristic because these yep. guys are – these are setup guys. They're looking to get their angles, looking to get their, some speed shots off, and some counters to where when Lomachenko went to fight Salido, he's fighting a turtle with a hammer. So
yeah,
and nobody's really nobody's really ready for that. Nobody, you know, that you know, it does take time to adjust. Where do I hit this guy at without getting hammered? I mean, that's
right.
literally what he had to worry about. It's hard to counterpunch power. Hard to counterpunch speed,
yeah.
but it's hard to counterpunch power because you could not be there. You're going to try to counterpunch your next thing you know, you're not there. So,
you know, especially with guys like Salido and Marcus Madonna, guys who come in low, you don't know where the punches are coming from all the time because these guys aren't necessarily concerned about, you know what, hitting you in the liver and hitting you in the jaw or hitting you on the temple. These guys are just throwing punches to land wherever. They're just trying to do damage. That's not what Lomachenko is dealing with tonight. He's not dealing with the guy who's going to come in with his head down and throw an overhand right to his shoulder. You know what I mean? He's not going to get that tonight. He's going to get something he's, you know, spent 400 fights, you know, seeing, essentially.
Exactly.
So you're going to see a much more tactical fight. There's going to be a lot less wear and tear from a grueling standpoint. It's going to be a more mental, tactical fight. And when these guys attack, they're both going to attack with precision. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, but does those 400 amateur fights hurt Lemachenko in that, you know, these amateurs, when they come up into the ranks, they're so used to looking for only certain punches. And like you said, I mean, Salido was hitting him anywhere, you know, and you know, is he going to be able to transfer that? I mean, is he going to be able to hit, you know, Russell anywhere? Because Russell sure as hell is going to throw the punches anywhere because he's got the experience.
Russell's a sharpshooter. He's not a throw that punches anywhere kind of guy. He's going to be looking to hit the ribs. You know, he's going to be looking to hit the traditional spots. And as far as Lomachenko adjusting to the pro game, you know what? I think he had a 6-round introductory course with Orlando Salido, because by the 7th round he was starting to adjust to that level of pro game. Russell, he's bringing more technical fundamental skills, more polish from a boxing standpoint than Salido did. Salido brought a kind of crafty veteran, roughhouse type of fight, 50s era fight. That's not what Gary Russell can do. Gary Russell can't fight like that. Gary Russell is one of these precision, sweet technician guys. He's not a rugged, throw the punches anywhere, 100 punch around kind of guy. He's economical, look for his shots. When he sees the opening, fire as many as he can in the opening. That's who Gary Russell is. That's not something Lomachenko hasn't seen before. That's not something – what Gary Russell is not something any amateur hasn't seen before. What Lomachenko isn't something any amateur hasn't seen before. What Salido is something that amateurs don't see. What Madonna is something that amateurs don't see, because guys, they can't fight like that and be effective in the amateurs. Because you know what? What you're doing is you're relying on the damage you're putting on your opponent to wear him down. You're saying to yourself, I know this is a 12-round fight. So you know what? By the 5th round, he's going to start to get beat up. He's going to not be able to function the way he functioned. Well, you can't do that in an amateur fight, because you only got 4 rounds. So Lomachenko, essentially, those first 4 rounds, he couldn't get Salido up off of him. He didn't know necessarily how to turn him. Salido was too big. He didn't know how to avoid the shots because they were coming from places he didn't see. Doesn't have to worry about that with Gary Russell. If he was fighting Orlando Salido tonight, he would be more prepared for the beginning of the fight, let alone Gary Russell. What he has to adjust to tonight more than anything is Gary Russell's speed, because Gary Russell will be in the amateurs. Gary Russell is going to be one of the fastest guys he has ever seen. So he's going to have to adjust to his speed. But as far as the punch, where they're coming from, nah. Nah, how many punches, nah. The biggest issue for him is not to leave himself open when he attacks because of Russell's speed. Russell will get there quickly. But Russell's going to have those same issues because Lomachenko's quick enough and smart enough with timing to get there and, encounter Gary too. So, wow, I'm looking forward to this fight. Zito, you do have showtime, right, my friend?
Yes.
I will be there, sir.
One thing I'll say, Gary Russell, he's not the most effective counterpuncher. He's more of a dictator.
Because I haven't seen him have to be an effective counterpuncher. All you have to see him do is attack. When somebody bum rushes him, he slips and steps to the side. And he's overwhelming his foes right now with talent. Even on the defensive end, he's overwhelming his foes with talent. He's not going to overwhelm Lomachenko with talent. He's going to have to take more than just his talent. He can win this fight based on the fact that he's a talented fighter, but it's going to take more than that.
And that's why I can't really say he's going to win the fight. I usually pick against talent when it comes to them facing a guy with a skill set like this.
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing more of Gary Russell. I mean, I've been impressed with his physical gifts. I mean, he's fast. Who he's fought, he's hit hard against. But level competition doesn't allow you to show what you have. And when you constantly have to use your talent, then that ends up with all you have. That's all you can rely on. And Andre Berto is an honest case to where, to me, his skill set diminished because he only had to use his talent. And so when you only have to use your talent in so many fights, and don't rely on anything else in so many fights, then what are you going to do when it's time to run? You're not used to doing it. You haven't needed to do it. That you don't have it. That's the way I look at it. And for him to just all of a sudden up and have it and to win a fight off of it, I don't see that. He can have it and survive.
Why I agree with you, man. I lean towards Lomachenko. But one thing I will say is I remember us sitting on this very show before the Lomachenko-Salido fight, and the same questions we have about Russell, we had about Lomachenko. He didn't win the fight, but when we walked away from that fight, we got a lot of those questions answered. Tonight, one way or the other, we're going to get a lot of questions answered.
Right, guys. And I've got to agree with you. I mean, I've said this before, and we've said it through the whole show, that is going to be the fight to see.
Yeah.
Now, all the fights are interesting. All of the fights. I mean, they have a nice little twist to them.
Yeah.
It's a good card. It's a very good card.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For our audience, it starts at 10 o'clock on Showtime. I believe they're broadcasting Chad Dawson's fight on Showtime at Extreme starting at 9 o'clock. So please tune in. Support boxing, please.
I would love to see Dawson win that fight, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I
hope he does. Yeah. Because if not, I don't know where he's going from here.
Well, you know, that's the funny thing. You know, we haven't discussed that, but, you know, just the losers in some of these scenarios are not in a great position. If Dawson loses, that would be three fights in a row, and now he lost to George Blaze, so that'd be bad. If Guerrero loses, again, that's coming off of a 13-month layoff, and after drubbing the Floyd, that wouldn't be a good thing. Devin Alexander would be his second loss in a row. You know, Lomachenko would be his second loss in a row. Gary Russell would be proven to be not as good as everyone thought he is if he loses. So, I mean, it's just that's what makes the fight so intriguing. When you could scrutinize and you still don't come up with clear, definitive answers. So, looking forward to tonight, definitely.
And the only one I guess could maybe afford to lose, I don't know if anybody can afford to lose, would be the guy Guerrero fighting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he just goes back to Japan and, you know, fights over there. You know, I think if Russell and Lomachenko put on a great fight, and if, you know, Russell were to lose a close, if either one of those guys lose close, I don't think it will diminish them, but it won't kill them, because I think it'll make the other guy look that much better. I think that's a fight where, you know, it's contingent upon the fight. You know, how the loss. That's very, you know, that's a good thing about boxing too. It's not just losing, but how you lose too. Like Marcos Maidana lost to Floyd, but the way he lost didn't diminish him at all. And I think that's, again, what makes boxing so interesting.
I didn't think he lost.
Yeah,
I thought it was a draw. I thought it was a nice, clean draw. So looked at the fight twice. I didn't come up any different.
Well, that's home cooking for you. I mean, Mayweather hasn't fought outside Las Vegas since 2005 for a reason.
Oh, he hasn't needed to. I mean, he's been cleanly beating everybody.
Yeah.
You know what, Mayweather's a money guy, and Las Vegas is his home. So I know what, I'm kind of the same way. If you want to borrow money from me, why do I have to come and drop it off to you? You need to come to my house. So I understand Floyd's concept.
Yeah. What's your address again? So I can come up and borrow some money.
Yeah.
Since you're offering, I mean, I might as well come up.
Yeah, too bad I don't have much, but coal for the stockings, coal for the stockings.
Well, guys, we're wrapping up another show. I mean, another great show. You know, we haven't mentioned Pacquiao yet, but we just mentioned him now. What do you guys think the chances are of that fight ever happening? Mayweather and Pacquiao. You think it'll ever happen now?
Nope.
Yeah, I don't either.
No.
Pacquiao needs that fight.
Really close to the end, so they're not looking to see each other more close in their career. So,
also, just from a tangible standpoint, Pacquiao renegotiated and re-signed with Top Rank. Floyd Mayweather has stated, first of all, Golden Boy Oscar De La Hoya has thought his relationship with Bob Arum, Richard Schaefer, and Arum still don't have a relationship. We know Floyd is with Al Haymon, and Floyd has stated that he will never work with Bob Arum. Floyd said that the only reason why he worked with Golden Boy is because he liked working with Richard Schaefer. And when he worked with Golden Boy, apparently he worked with Richard Schaefer, not Oscar De La Hoya. So with that being said, you can expect Haymon and Schaefer and Floyd and those guys to still somewhat work together. with Aram not being part of that picture. So, I mean, just from that standpoint, there's no way that fight gets made.
Yeah.
Not even to talk about it, get to the point where they're talking about it, then you have to negotiate it, which becomes something completely different. So, you know, and there's no way the fight gets made unless Floyd Mayweather loses the fight.
Yeah, Pacquiao needs this fight a lot more than anybody, you know, than Mayweather for sure.
Well, you know, it's funny because right after Chris Algieri beat Provinikoff, that's the first thing Bob Arum was talking about. I think Algieri make a good opponent for Pacquiao. And Michael Koch, Pacquiao's advisor, said there's going to be no Manny Pacquiao-Chris Algieri fight.
No.
But he's also saying that it doesn't look like there's going to be a Marquez 5 fight. So where does Pacquiao go? Provinikoff. Like, that was the fight a lot of people wanted to see. That loss to Algieri changes that significantly. Although Algieri beat Provinikoff, I don't think he establishes himself as a Pacquiao-type player. With no Marquez on the table, no Golden Boy, well, maybe some Golden Boy fighters on the table. If it does open the relationship, you know, you can find out who actually has a contract with Golden Boy as opposed to Al Haymon. And, you know, maybe it opens the door for a Pacquiao against a Danny Garcia or something like that. But right now, I mean, the options are very thin. He's beaten Brandon Rios. Marquez beat Alvarado. Algieri beat Provinikoff. Top-ranked stable of 147-pound fighters is really kind of shallow. And Jesse Vargas, and actually Algieri should go fight Jesse Vargas because Jesse Vargas is not yet ready for primetime television. So.
Or Algieri.
He's
not ready for Algieri either.
So, I mean, it's funny that, you know, Michael Kahn said that Marquez was pricing himself out. I think Marquez has looked around and is assessing the fact that, you know what, I'm the only game in town, essentially. You earn the most money with me, and there's no one else you can fight. No one's going to want to see him go back into a Bradley fight. I mean, so, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens over these next few months with Manuel Pacquiao. Because, again, if the Marquez fight is not made and the Golden Boy top rank thing is not thought out enough, this Cold War is not thought out enough, who does he fight come November?
Provinikoff. That's really the only almost sensible thing set up.
And you know
even
what?
Though he lost to Algieri.
And that fight doesn't have his luster that it has. But not only that, that fight's been extremely difficult to make. Why? Because Freddie Roach trains both of them. So, you know, that fight has always been a fight that, you know, at one time, you know, up until Algieri, fans were kind of clamoring for, knowing that the top-ranked 140-pound boxing league is shallow. Fans were really clamoring for that fight before the Algieri fight. But it always seemed like that was going to be the absolute last fight because of Freddie Roach's relationship with both fighters and the fact that both fighters have a cordial relationship, you know. So, I mean, even though that still may be one of the better fights, that's not a fight that management or their trainers are looking to – well, their trainer is looking to make. So Provinikoff was always kind of never really on the table. It just started bubbling, and they started speaking on it because fans were talking about it. Now that nobody's talking about it, that's essentially off the table.
And
if Alvarado had beat Marquez, then, you know, maybe Alvarado.
So now you almost have to match what, Marquez against Provinikoff?
Well, Marquez only wants to fight. That was the issue before because they wanted to match Marquez with Provinikoff before. Marquez said he didn't want to fight Provinikoff because Provinikoff fighting down at 140 had nothing to offer. Marquez wants that fifth title. Bob Arum said made the fight between he and Alvarado at the 147-pound fight, though it was a catchweight, but he made it a title eliminator. That's why Marquez took that fight, because he wanted to get back in the ring. He's once again to be the first Mexican in history to win 5 titles in 5 different weight divisions. And so Provinikoff doesn't offer him that, so that's a fight he was never interested in taking. Now that Provinikoff lost, he has absolutely no reason to take the fight. There's even less money on the table to take it down. So, I mean, it's just, it's much more beneficial for top rank for them to make relationships with Golden Boy Promotions right now because Pacquiao You know, obviously his draw at the box office has been dwindling, and part of it is because of this is dearth of opponents. So, you know what I mean? It's wow. I mean, it has to be Marquez. I think they just have to pay. They're going to have to come up with something, because if it's not Marquez and they don't, again, Golden Boy Promotions fighters are still kind of out the question at this moment. It's not Marquez, then who the hell is it? So,
well, Timothy Bradley's out the question. He fought everybody.
Exactly.
So I mean, he
bring Jesse. That's why do you think Aram started saying, "Oh, Chris Algieri looked great. He'd be a great opponent for Pacquiao," because he knows he can't feed him Jesse Vargas. At least Chris Algieri proves competent against somebody. Jesse Vargas is fighting guys who Ray Robinson knocked out in the fight prior. Who our buddies are new knocked out in the fight prior. That's who Jesse Vargas is fighting. At least Chris Algieri beat somebody competent, so he knew he could say that.
Yeah, Chris Algieri, he's never going to get a shot.
No, Chris Algieri's not. Again, you know, Bob Arum, and you know, he has very little options when it comes to Manny Pacquiao. So you talk about a Floyd Mayweather fight, and Floyd Mayweather, especially with the Marcos Madonna fight, still has more options. And you know what? As long as he's more options, he's more of a draw. He's fighting not the same opponents over and over. Floyd did less pay-per-views, too, than he did with, you know, he did a little less than he wanted to with Madonna, whether they want to admit that or not. I don't think they did a million buys, which for Floyd is not quite up to par. But Pacquiao's numbers were way down. You know, they were in the mid-100,000s. They weren't close to a million. And so he can't even claim at this point to be, you know, an equal. Right now, he can't claim to be the equal fighter because of the knockout, and he can't claim to be the equal draw at the box office. So, again, that fight would be hell for Top Rank and Pacquiao to negotiate. So I don't know where Pacquiao goes. I think Bob Arum has to do something, you know, has to make amends with Golden Boy to make a fight happen. In fact, you know, there have been talks about Pacquiao Canelo. So, you know, obviously that's what Bob Arum's thinking, too. And it was even said, you know, Roach said, well, there'd have to be a catchweight of 150, and Canelo said, there wouldn't be a catchweight. But everybody was saying, well, why are you even having the talks? They're not even to that point with their relationship yet. But hopefully a lot of people are looking at tonight as a start, even though tonight wasn't the true start, but they're looking at it as a start because the promotional companies are working together. But to me, that's right. Pacquiao's only chance. Outside of Marquez, his only chance, because there's no one out there in the Top Rank stable for him to fight.
Oh, and it's sad because, I mean, there's a guy that gave a lot of years to the fight game, you know, and it comes right down to it. You know, you lose a fight and, you know, all of a sudden you're the pariah.
And, you know, and that could have been so much of Pacquiao re-signing with Top Rank. Remember, Tim Bradley re-signed with Top Rank. Maybe a lot of that could be, you know, predicated on the fact that maybe Bob Arum, you know, Todd DeBuff, the people who are at Top Rank said, look, we're going to get this Cold War thing thawed out. And, you know, maybe that's part of the reason why they signed. So, you know, you never know. Top Rank built their careers. You know, Manny Cotto said he would always work with Top Rank, or he would re-sign with Top Rank. They built these guys' careers, and maybe if they're getting it in their ear that Top Rank is really looking to make these fights, then it would make sense for them to sign up. So,
well, guys, it is that time. You know, once again, another great show, another great Fighting Words. We didn't mention Pacquiao, like always. It just gut feeling. Who wins tonight? Each fight. Who are you guys picking?
I'll go with Devin Alexander. Very close decision. I'm gonna go with Lomachenko. Not so close decision. I think Gary Russell, he's going to survive. And I'll go with Robert Guerrero. And it was a more exciting fight than people think, but I think he's tough enough that he'll, and well-rounded enough, he'll win. And a pretty good, well-deserved decision.
You know what? I don't know how each fight's going to go, but I agree with Zito on all the names.
Yeah. No, I I think you're – I agree, and I hate to come back to this, but I think that Russell fight against Lemchenko is probably going to be the most entertaining fight. I would love to see that thing go to the cards, because I think it'd be – if it goes to the cards, then it was a war.
If it doesn't go to the cards, then Lemchenko knocked Gary Russell out.
Well, we'll see, man. I wouldn't. One thing, I won't discount Gary Russell's speed and pop, but we'll see. It'll be an interesting time. Like, it was an interesting hour on this radio with you guys.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, guys, again, thanks so much for coming on. When you guys want to lead us out?
Yeah, I sure will. I want to thank you, Frankie, and I want to thank you, Ty. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Ty?
Hey, you know, it's been a great hour. Frankie, thanks for coming in. Tell Butch we said hi. We love him. Bob is our co-pilot. Everyone, have a good week.
All right. Guys, thanks so much for coming on tonight. It's been another great hour. Next week, Butch will be back. Ty and Zito will be back. And we'll be discussing some very interesting fights. Results, anyway, from tonight. So, guys, once again, thanks very much. We're going to lead out tonight. This show and every show on the Fight Words Radio Network are in memory of my brother, Robert Anthony Carroll, who was the creator and founder of Fighting Words. It was 3 years ago on the 18th of this month that we lost Bobby tragically, and every day he's thought of and loved. Guys, thanks for making the dream, keeping the dream alive, and we will see you guys again next week. As soon as I can find the song.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemaheza hilma, sona shene vorat fet, hakuig gen ma'ilma. Spirit and with mind aflame, so I shall.